Sports, 8:30. Saturday Night Theatre.
I must say, Peter.
Nobody's asking you to, Ronnie.
It's a positively spectral look. Don't you think so, Bright?
It's a passport photo, isn't it? Blown up about 30 times. Who is it, Quillam? Control?
No, it bloody well isn't Control. It's Carla.
Carla? Who was he when he was at home?
Carla, my dear, recruited Bill Hayden.
The Mole.
The Mole. And ran him thereafter for 30 years.
So Carla...
He's the head of a KGB directorate. Carla is his work name.
Hello.
George, my dear, and Oliver.
Oh, admiring Carla, are we? Why do you hang him there, George? It isn't a little macabre, don't you think, the victorious enemy?
Do you like him positively gloating down on you all?
Gloating? Well, Bill Hayden's dead.
Well, and Carla's alive, you mean? You'd rather have a live enemy than a dead one? Is that what you mean, George?
The Honourable Schoolboy by John le Carré, dramatised in two parts by Frederick Bradnam, with Peter Vaughan as George Smiley and Martin Jarvis as Jerry Westerby. Part 1.
George Smiley isn't just cleaning the stable. He's carrying his horse up the hill as well.
But is the circus still an operable organisation, Martin Dale? I mean, what work is there to do?
I've no idea, my dear Bright. No idea. Three quarters of his staff have departed. His networks must be blown to absolute smithereens. And his operational accounts, oh, they call them reptile funds. Frozen solid. Not a friend in Whitehall or Washington, unless Lacon at the Cabinet Office can be called a friend.
Lacon needs Smiley. Surely Smiley needs Lacon.
Oh, true, yes. What a prig Lacon can be. I hear George has brought back two of his old friends to while away the hours. That vast old woman, Connie Sachs, and her monkey partner, De Salis. Such an unattractive couple, my dear.
And Anne Smiley?
Oh, dismissed, my dear. After years of putting up with her perfectly healthy peccadillos, what does the little man do? Turns round and with quite Napoleonic brutality kicks her in the teeth.
Told her never to darken his doorstep, oh, eh?
No, quite the contrary. He removed himself overnight, my dear. Set up camp in the attics behind his throne room with its portrait of Carla. Left poor Anne abandoned in the Chelsea house. It's a scandal. I shall tell everybody.
Oh, come and sit down, Peter.
Thanks, George.
Ferrets have gone?
They have. The place is in a terrible mess.
But worth it, Peter.
Not half. I've made out a report on what they found. Bill Hayden had the place bugged to the eyebrow.
Yes, well, in 1966 he was the driving force of the building committee.
Did you suspect, George?
The inventory of the Oreo store showed a quantity of house equipment missing. And Carla, we know, likes to run moles and sound thieves in tandem.
Too bloody true. Three mics were embedded in the fabric. One was collecting dust on top of a cupboard in the conference room. One was behind the cistern in the senior officer's lavatory.
And one just left in a desk, yes, I know. Have you thought, Peter, when operational, Hayden's microphones were being paid for by the Treasury on the electricity bill? Now, are the Moscow gazer and the China watcher waiting?
It's gone 9, they should be. I'll ring for them. We seem to specialise in having these meetings after dark.
I think it's quite fortuitous, Peter.
Are Connie Sachs and Dr. Salis there? Oh, good. Tell them to come in, will you? Yes, they're here. You know, George, I always see De Salis on a long silver chain which Connie holds as if he was her monkey. He's peeping round from behind her enormous caftan. A Beardsley drawing, it would be.
George, dear. Peter?
Hello. Hello,
hello, Smiley.
Do sit down, please. You there, Connie?
Do you want me, George?
Oh, you must stay, Peter.
Have you a plan, George?
A premise, Connie. We decided to go on the attack some weeks ago, you'll remember, to produce intelligence without resources. I'll look at it like this. The task of an intelligence service is not to play chase games, but to deliver intelligence to its customers. And if we don't, they'll go somewhere else or do it themselves with amateur incompetence. We also need to produce to barter, particularly with our American cousins. To put it simply, not to produce is not to trade, and not to trade is to die.
To produce intelligence without resources? But we have resources of a kind, George.
And we now know all that Hayden did, the methods he used.
The premise is this. Hayden did nothing against the circus that was not directed, and the direction came from one man, Carla. Now, in briefing Hayden, we can take it that Carla was exposing the gaps in Moscow Center's knowledge. At the same time, Hayden was made by Carla to suppress certain intelligence which came his way. He was made to downgrade it, distort it, deride it, even deny it circulation altogether in our offices. In making Hayden do this, Carla was indicating the secrets he did not want revealed.
So we can take the back bearings, can't we, darling?
That's right, Con. That's exactly what we can do. For instance, we must discover his selection of files. We must compare what came into his office with what went out. We must simply find Hayden's, and therefore Carla's, point of departure.
Are you saying, George, that it was Hayden's paperwork which caused his downfall?
No, Peter, the paperwork's important only so we can follow Hayden's pug marks. Hayden trapped himself because he panicked. Hayden's panic took the form of a spontaneous intervention in a field operation. It must have been where the threat to himself was suddenly so grave that his one hope was to suppress the operation, despite the risk.
You've been asking the retired field men this, George?
I put a question to them. Can you remember any incident during your service in the field when, in your opinion, you were unreasonably restrained from following a field lead?
Had any helpful answers, George?
Yes, Con, one. Sam Collins said, come to think of it, yes, old boy, I can.
Sam Collins? He was in the Far East, wasn't he?
It was when he was in Vientiane. I shall see Collins again quite often, probably. Perhaps this will give us something to trade. To act, and not merely to react.
You've lost me, George.
Oh, Peter, all George means is that there's something left undone. Back bearings, Peter, darling.
At least I know why I'm here, Chief.
So we shall have a guided tour, darlings. It'll be super fun. Like the Easters when Mother hid painted eggs round the house and sent us gals off hunting for them. Connie's got one, Peter. She's got one, sure as boots.
I've told George. You're to go in.
Thank you, darling. You are coming with me, I hope.
Of course.
George, darling.
So, Con, what is it? Sit down. You have the files?
Old Connie has the files, but let me speak first, George.
Fire away. The outline only.
A Moscow Center gold seam.
Gold seam?
Yes, Peter, before your time. A laundering operation to move clandestine funds into open hotels.
The gold went out through the Middle East, turned up in Paris, then back east via Italy to the Banque de l'Indochine.
The Banque de l'Indochine is where?
Oh, Vientiane, of course, Peter. And at this juncture, George, all the papers went to old Bill Hayden's London station, with the Soviet section's recommendation for a full-scale inquiry in the field. London station killed the suggestion stone dead. Here, George, it's on the file. Oh, it was a gold seam they threaded across the map, oh, so carefully.
Potentially prejudicial to a highly delicate source, file and forget. Thank you, Carl. File and forget. I always have good reasons for doing nothing.
Exactly, dear, exactly. And there's this, George. Before Bill had time to get his hoof on things, A formal search request was sent to our residency in Vientiane. There. See, George, darling?
And Vientiane sent a lengthy reply, I see. We don't seem to have that. Where is it?
In the shredder, darling. In the shredder.
Sam Collins runs a gaming club, Peter, very West End. Doing rather well, I've no doubt.
Hayden had him sacked, I see.
Oh, yes, there was nothing in it.
But Bill Hayden wanted him out.
Ah, yes, as a precaution, I imagine. Sam's an old Asian hand. 5 years in Borneo, 6 in Burma, 5 more in northern Thailand, and lastly 3 in the Laotian capital in Vientiane.
Has he a good memory, George?
More than good, Peter. But of course he may not want to remember everything. I'll test the water, and probably he'll do the same.
Come in.
Sam, how good of you.
Not at all, George. Glad to get away from the gamblers. How are you, Peter?
Well enough, Sam.
So, come on through, Sam. See we're not disturbed, please, Peter.
Yes, of course.
Somebody's made a terrible mess of this building, George.
What do you expect, Sam? Do you remember at all a request that came to you in Vientiane once from London concerning certain money drafts from Paris?
A standard request, was it?
Please confirm or deny sort of thing. Ring a bell by any chance?
Monthly transfers to the Banque de Landesheim. Hefty ones. Payments made on the last Friday of every month. Start date January 73 or thereabouts. It rings a bell, sure.
What did you do to find out, Sam? Do you remember?
I had a contact in the Andesheen. Johnny.
Is that file, Sam?
Johnny was reliable, George. He had a good track record. I used him on a few narcotics cases.
Oh, you handled narcotics too, did you, Sam?
Johnny was a counter clerk. He checked the ledgers. The money was telex from Paris. The credit of one Delassue staying at the Hotel Condor, Vientiane. It was payable on production of passport number K6984401. This was on the last Friday of each month. Delassue called on Monday, first thing, drew the money out in cash, stuffed it in a briefcase and walked out with it.
How much?
Started small, grew fast.
Ending where?
25,000 US in big ones. The big table. Are you checking me against the record, old boy?
I'm not checking you against anything, sir. Well, you know how it is at times like this, clutching at straws, listening to the wind. Delassue, did you get a look at him?
I did. He was the second secretary commercial at the Soviet embassy in Vientiane, known as Commercial Boris.
What did he do with the money, Sam? Did you discover?
He took a taxi around the town, came back to the main square, ducked into a local bank and paid the money straight across the counter to the credit of another account. Have you lost the files, George?
So far, it's very good, Sam, this other account.
I used my senior girl, Sarah Train, George. She raised a small scene in the bank when Boris was paying in, demanded to be served first, just as the paying in slip was on the counter. She read it upside down. $25,000 American dollars to the credit of the overseas account of Indochata Vientiane.
Indochata Vientiane, Sam?
A Mickey Mouse Aviation Company, old boy. Assets, a handful of clapped-out DC-3s, a tin hut, a dumb blonde for the front office, and a wildcat Mexican pilot known round town as Tiny Ricardo, on account of his considerable height.
So you knew the firm already?
Oh, Vientiane's not exactly a giant metropolis. Everybody in town knew Tiny Ricardo. He was a local legend.
Fine. Now, let's get back to what you did next. May we? You know about the money, know to whom it's paid, know who handles it. What was your next move, Sam?
I checked on Commercial Boris. It should all be on the record, old boy.
I want you to pretend that record doesn't exist. All will be revealed to you in due season. Do you remember anything about Indochata Vientiane?
The trail stopped dead with Indochata.
Just a moment, Sam. I'd like Dr. Salis to come in here. You don't mind.
Delighted, Elboy.
Peter, ask De Salis to join us. Thank you.
That's Carla, is it?
Who? Oh, yes, yes, it is.
Not much of a likeness, I'm afraid. But the best we can do, as yet.
You've got some personal thing about him, haven't you?
There was a dumb blonde in the front office, you said.
Yes. That's right. Ricardo was a madcap marcher. The Chinese wouldn't have trusted him with the stamp money. Hello, Doc. How are you?
I don't complain, Sam. Well, Smiley?
Do sit down. Sam knew of the gold seam money, Doc. He tracked its transfer in Vientiane to the account of a disreputable aviation company, Indo-Charter Vientiane. Sam?
Indo-Charter was an overseas Chinese company, mainly Swatanese.
Oh! They're the very worst. Most difficult to discover anything about. Where was it registered?
Paris. Reliable information, Doc. Said that the Societe was the property of a Shanghainese trading company based on Manila, which in turn paid its dues to an amorphous outfit in Hong Kong called China Air Sea.
China Air Sea. Trading company?
Owned junk fleets, cement factories, racehorses, restaurants.
How did things go from there, Sam?
London scrubbed the case.
There! They scrubbed things.
So you dropped everything, sir?
Orders is orders.
Oh, yes, of course. But it was some time yet before you returned to London, wasn't it? You didn't discover by any chance if the payments from Paris went on, the gold seam?
Stopped dead. Paris turned the tap off.
And Commercial Boris?
Went home.
And Ricardo, the Mexican flyer?
Died. Crashed up on the Thai border. The boys put it down to an overload of heroin.
Sam, when you eventually got back to London and had your welcome home, well done session with Bill, did you happen to mention the matter to him?
I asked him what the hell he thought he was up to.
And what did Bill have to answer there, Sam?
He blamed the cousins. Said they got in the act ahead of us. It was their case and their parish.
Have you any reason to believe that?
Sure. Tiny Ricardo.
You guessed he was the cousins' man?
I flew for them. George, they needed his sort of flying. They used him to fly drugs out of Laos. They used him to fly into Yunnan province, probably with drugs. He was on their books. The cousin's pilot.
Yes, I see. Doc, there's just a couple of things I want to ask Sam.
So, we shall sniff around China Air Sea. Thank you, Sam. It has been nice seeing you again.
And you, Doc.
Sam, I think I ought to hear a little about the girl, the blonde, in the Indo-Charter office. Was it chivalry that has made you miss her out so far?
Lost the card index, have you, old boy?
Bill Hayden lost it. And the file, Sam.
Never throw your chips away. Never make a present of your assets. But a very hungry mood prevails in this house of yours, I felt it the moment I walked in. Give me a search request, George. I'll write her out for you.
Worthington Elizabeth, alias Lizzie, alias Ricardo Lizzie, age about 27, nationality British, status married, details of husband unknown, maiden name also unknown, 1972-3, common law wife of Ricardo, Tiny, now dead. Last known occupation, typist receptionist with Indo-Charter Vientiane S.A. Previous occupations, nightclub hostess, whiskey saleswoman, high-class tart. There is no trace, repeat, no trace of this subject in registry. Suggest superior should be used, not high class for whores.
So Hayden systematically and totally brushed over every trace of the Vientiane gold seam operation. Can't found only one piece of evidence even of Hayden's hand in all this, con.
On a clip of destruction certificates, it said risk of compromising delicate American operation, and it was signed in our Bill's work name.
Well, that's what he told Sam Collins to.
Well, he had to stick to his story, didn't he, darling?
Let us have Molly Meakin in, shall we?
I'll fetch her, George.
Can't beat the old circus. Remember her father and brother?
Mm. Ah, she's a pet. And she's kept a channel open to us at the cousins.
There's not many of us can walk in and out of the Grosvenor Square annex these days, be it even on Molly's humble level.
There she is.
Good evening, Mr. Smiley. Miss Sachs, Mr. DeSalis.
Hello. Sorry to keep you so late, Molly. Sit yourself there.
Thank you. I only got back just now. Ed, I'm afraid, insisted on taking me to a rerun of True Grit in their little cinema.
Poor lot.
Among a group of names for trace requests, we included the Mexican pilot, Tiny Ricardo. Deceased?
He is deceased, Chief, they say. Same date as Mr. Collins claimed.
And did that lead to anything?
Oh, yes. Bill Hayden sent the annex a hands-off notice. He advised them that Indo-Charter Vientiane S.A. was under scrutiny, and we had an agent in place. Well, the Americans consented to drop any interest they had in that direction. I have the printout here.
That is what I call playing both ends against the middle. And pointing everybody in the wrong direction.
Take a lie and reverse it. Clever Bill Hayden.
Thank you, Molly. Thank you very much indeed. We must talk to the bankers, Doc.
Yes, but you, George, rather than me.
We have a trail, Peter. A purpose, a direction. So we no longer have to charge around pretending to be on the attack. Now we are.
Commercial Boris has been found. A product of Carla's private training school, darlings. Colonel Timin, alias Smirnoff, like the vodka, alias Kursky, and a very important paymaster.
We are beginning, I think, to unravel the positively arcane connections of Indo-Charter Vientiane S.A. and its echelons of parent companies, of which the most important is China Airsea.
I want Carla to hear from everyone just how dead we are.
Old Craw's obliged from Hong Kong. This in a Sydney morning paper, George.
Sudden disappearance of the occupiers of High Haven, Hong Kong. The Spook House. The circus has pulled out of Bangkok, Singapore, Saigon also. A hood's Dunkirk. A duck's dive. Is Kim the boy spy vanished for good then?
Excellent stuff. We must congratulate Craw.
They had to replace the gold team. It was big business, and Connie must find out how and where.
George tells me, Doc, he's been seeing eminent bankers of his acquaintance in Hamburg and Amsterdam, of all places.
But of course, Peter, to find out where the money is kept.
It's Hong Kong, Peter. A trustee account in a Hong Kong bank.
You mean the gold seam, which was stopped at Vientiane?
Oh, yes. Carla went on paying, I'm sure. He only changed the route.
Are you speaking to Oliver Lakin about it, George?
I shall have to. We need to put an agent into Hong Kong.
It's entirely up to you, George, to define what is chargeable under your mandate. Hong Kong, is it? It'll be up to the Intelligence Steering Committee to determine the scope of your action.
Whom are you contemplating sending to Hong Kong as field man, George?
Jerry Westerby, I think. He's been sitting things out in Tuscany long enough.
Signor! Signor! His telegram! It say the Honorable Gerald Westerby.
That's me, Mama. Let me look, sir.
Oh, it's bad. It's your guardian is ill.
Yeah, so I see. Well, it can't be helped. I have to pack and leave pronto, Mama. Go back to England. My guardian wants me by his bedside.
Oh, it's very sad. It's very, very sad. But he'll leave you money, perhaps.
Super. Green park. After brown Tuscany. George will have the message. George Smiley. My guardian. Where are you going to send old Jerry, old sport? Only you don't ask. Ah, here he comes. Plump and small and neat. He hasn't changed. Looks like any other bloke. Something in insurance. Could be a manager at the Ritz on his way there.
Hello, Jerry. Nice to see you.
Gosh, super, George. Hello.
Let's walk a bit, shall we?
Just as you say.
There are one or two people watching my back and a couple watching yours. I thought it a good idea to feel quite safe. Our first meeting, you never know.
I'm in your hands, George. Your telegram took the wind right out of my sails. I thought Bill Hayden had blown me sky high.
Yes, yes, quite. However, it seems Bill never got round to blowing the occasional. It's not that he didn't think you important enough. It's simply that other claims on him took priority.
I can live with it.
Quite. Stubbs of the Waterloo Group of Newspapers knows about you. He's Far East editor, Waterloo House, Fleet Street.
Stubbs is known to me. He worked for my old man.
Yes, of course. You'll get your accredited press correspondent papers from Stubbs. Go there today, will you?
I'll hoof it once I've left you.
Far East, Hong Kong, at least at first.
Craw still there?
Ah, yes. You'll need his help. Before you go, Jerry, you'll need some refreshers. Sarat stuff in particular. Peter Gwillem will let you know. I'll have to pick you up in a plain van somewhere.
Fine by me, George.
And your game and so on. You have the will.
No problem.
A lot of people haven't these days. The will. Especially in England. A lot of people see doubt as a legitimate philosophical posture. They think of themselves in the middle, whereas, of course, really, they're nowhere.
Sport, you point me, and I'll march. Tell me the shots, and I'll play them. You're the owl, not me.
Sorry to be old-fashioned. Our ways should part in a moment. Peter Gwillem will brief you just before you go. Enjoy the next few weeks.
Hello, Peter boy. How's trade?
Picking up, Jerry. Welcome to the circus. Or what's left of it.
Ripped apart. Had the Irish in, have you?
The ferrets, actually.
Find something, did they?
Oh, yes. Bill Hayden's super secrets. You came in a plain van.
Oh, sure, Peter. Turfed out at the tradesman's entrance.
Here we are. We are very security-minded these days, Jerry. I hope you've had an enjoyable few weeks.
Very. Tell George they were super.
Come on through, Jerry.
Thanks. Yeah, very intensive. Strong-arm stuff, memory tests, taking in phone numbers, word codes, contacts, and all the old fallbacks. Emergency drill, just in case.
Come and sit down. The Inquisitors say you're as good as ever. Congratulations.
Thanks. Super. Well, what have you got for me, Peter?
A bank, Jerry. The Kowloon Bank, Statue Square, Hong Kong. The trustee department of this bank has a certain account. We want to know what's in the account and whose name is on it. You'll have to photograph the files. I'll give you the number of the account later.
Am I going to break in, Peter?
No, you'll walk in. We've smoothed your path the best we can. The deputy chief of the trustee department is your bloke, one Frost by name. He's youngish, approachable, and likes all the things Hong Kong can offer, like Chinese girls. Mm. Craw will introduce you.
Frost, good. I'll be alone, I take it.
I'm afraid so. We've no money for babysitters. The best we can do is have a chap watching you go in and come out, largely so we here will know when you've begun.
When do I go?
You're booked on a flight tomorrow.
Got a name for me, have you?
Your cryptonym will be Schoolboy, Jerry.
Schoolboy. Fair enough.
Medium pace. Bit of an in-swing. Dead wicket. They like cricket here. The Hong Kong Mafia playing itself. Just about begun. Saturday morning for an all-day game. The banking halls shut at 12. Most of the shops don't bother to open at all. Now, is there enough to blackmail little Frosty with? Chinese girl in love nest? Musical beds? Hope so. Hope so. 10 minutes to go, Jerry, old sport. Walk slowly. God, George, why the hell am I alone? I feel tired and hungry. For all I know, I'm being spooked by half the Chinese mafia. those not playing cricket. So, here I am. All is clear. I'm alone. Gotta do it alone. Relax.
Relax.
Bank of China, Union Jack, Bank of Kowloon, 12. They don't shut the doors, for God's sake. Of course not. You're growing senile, Jerry. Doors remain open, banking hall shut. So it's upstairs with the minimum of attention. In you go. I'm on my way, Frosty.
Yeah? Good. Peter, he's gone in.
Thank you, George. Time 0302 Circus, 1202 Hong Kong, Kowloon Bank. I never have liked Burns, you know, George. They're so damned unreliable.
Yes, people don't always respond logically to blackmail.
Let's hope Frost does. Good luck to you, schoolboy.
It'll be at least an hour before we know. I shall be in my office. Stay here, will you, in case of a signal?
Of course, George.
Up we go. And up. Ninth floor. Stop. Out you get. All by myself. Fourth door on left, and I hope they're right. One, two, three, four. Through we go. Yes, clerks, Chinese, work until one. Say hello, round eye on business.
Morning, gang.
Good day, sir.
Good day, sir.
On our way. So far, a walkover. Pushover. Second door. By appointment only. Through we go. Red light bulb. Here is Frosty. J. Frost, Deputy Chief Trustee, appointments only. Do not enter when red light is on. Not on. Nice peephole. There's the boy. Podgy little Frosty with his pretty stack of pretty files. So, in we go.
Gosh, Frosty. Hello. Super.
What?
Am I early or late? Are you all right after last night's hijinks?
God, it's his nib. What the hell are you doing here, you disgusting aristocrat?
Visiting, old sport.
How did they let you in? I suppose you flashed your honourable at him. This isn't a cat house, you know. This is a respectable bank, more or less.
Very grand building.
You alcoholic, dissolute, lecherous, libidinous...
newshound.
Bloody Mary, do you? Cabinet's full of booze, hardly ever used.
Bloody Mary would slip down grateful, sport.
And I'll say one thing for you, blue bloody...
Keep safe around your neck. Keep your back to me.
In the middle of Salisbury desk. Plain, I reckon you find a cat
button operates light. Seconds. Alarm button beneath. Got it.
Girls.
Key in off position. Take
shocking.
It out. All done.
Those girls, what were their names, eh? Oh, dear, oh, dear.
7 and 24.
That's it. 7 and 24. What poetry. What a memory. I say, you shouldn't be that side of my desk.
Oh, I wanted to know what it felt like.
Well, now you know. Bloody Mary. Bungo.
Cheers.
Oh, incredible, girls. Incredible company. I mean... why should a bloke like me bother with a bloke like you? What's the matter? What's eating you?
There's an eye at the spy hole, Frosty.
Hmm? Oh, Milky Way, my boss going home to his lovely lady wife. 6'8" and a cavalry moustache. Not him, her.
Why didn't he come in?
I thought I had a client, I suppose. Cheer up, why are you looking so pious, eh? Gives me the creeps.
How's the Mrs. Frosty? How's she doing?
Oh, still ailing nicely, thank you.
Ring the hospital, did you?
This morning? I wasn't coherent.
When are you next visiting?
Now, look, shut up about her, do you mind? Now, I'm going to have the other half, you?
Now, my little man, before we get comfy again.
I want to open an account, Frosty.
You?
Me, Frosty.
But from all you told me last night, you haven't got the resources to open a piggy bank. Look, look, get yourself a bloody drink. Stop playing Boris Karloff on a wet Wednesday.
I didn't mean we'd open my account exactly, sport.
Hmm?
I meant someone else's.
Oh, no. Oh, no, Jerry.
A trust account, Frosty, lodged in your incorruptible hands. In that safe, Frosty. Sharpish.
You set me up. I thought I had a friend at last, and now you want to screw me?
You shouldn't mingle with news hounds, Frosty. Shouldn't have shot your mouth off.
But friends do shoot their mouths off. That's what friends are for. Oh, Jerry, no, I'm afraid it's right out of the question. No go.
Here's the deal, sport. If you don't play, the comic will blow the whistle on you, you hear me? Front page mugshot, banner headlines, would you buy a second-hand trust account from this man? We tell him how you maintained a love nest over on Kowloon Side, what you got up to in the cat house last night, and we suggest many nights of the same. And we check the story out with your chairman, let your missus know.
Oh, Jerry. Oh, God.
Yeah, that's the bad news. Good news is 500 US into your hot little hand, and no one any the wiser.
Why do you want to see this account? Why, in God's name?
Well, crime and corruption, sport. The Hong Kong connection, Grub Street names the guilty men. Account number 442. In that safe, Frosty.
Yes. No.
Open the safe, Frosty, because otherwise you're 40 and on the road with a sick wife and bambinos and the whole catastrophe. Do it, sport.
Bastard. Well, what's the number?
442.
442. Crime and corruption, my ass. All right, suppose he cuts a few corners. Name me a Chinese who doesn't.
No Chinese, is he?
Three folders. I suppose you'll photograph them.
Ever seen him, the Chinaman?
Once, the Macau dog races. Had him pointed out to me. Wasn't doing too badly for himself. Any nice little blonde party he had with him. Round eye.
Hmm. Here's the 500. Take it, Frosty.
Bloody well will. You're out of your blasted mind if you think you can bust a man like him.
Go outside, Frosty. Keep your eyes open. I'll let you know when I'm through.
Click your bloody camera fast.
I shall. Now, outside.
Yes? He's left the bank. Thanks.
Is he out, Peter?
He is, George. Time 0447 Circus, 1347 Hong Kong.
Long enough. He must have got something.
No, he has to get to Crawl safely.
Oh, he should, he should.
And Crawl will develop the snaps if he's got them, if they've come out.
You shouldn't worry so much, you know, Peter.
No, George.
Well, Crawl, are you at home as arranged? Flowers at the window? Old dried flowers, yes. At home. Ring the bell.
What bastard's that?
Brought you some dirty pictures, sport.
The door's open. All your upper class backside up the stairs.
Am I glad to see you, Craw?
How's Monsignor Goss Super? You have a rough trip getting here?
Only in the mine. My usual terror of pickpockets until I got in the car. Then every clapped-out Honda seemed to be on my tail.
Ah, you're getting too old for it, poor blooming pony. You got the film?
Yes.
Go in, pour yourself a beer. I'll be in the bathroom doing my best for this. You make yourself at home, your grace.
Yes? Thank you. Craw reports schoolboy's arrival with the goodies, George.
Ah, yes. We must wait for developments, Peter.
You meant that as a pun, I take it, George.
Pun? Ah, I see. Those cassette films need delicate handling, they tell me.
Craw's good, George. Very good.
As I know. And schoolboy?
If you cast him properly, like you've done, I wouldn't always trust him, though.
Why, Peter?
Too wild. No, too independent-minded, liable to go off in all directions. I think you need to keep him on a tight leash.
Yes, you could well be right. And, of course, he's a woman's man.
For God's sake, Craw, what goes on? Well, what's the result? They haven't come out.
Craw, they haven't bloody come out.
To the contrary, my son. To the contrary, sir. Every frame is a bold and disturbing masterpiece.
Schoolboys landed the complete file. Oh, all the figures, everything that was originally paid through Vientiane into the Indo-Charter account has found its way into a trustee account in Hong Kong. When the Vientiane arrangement ended, Carla didn't miss a month. He switched to the alternative route immediately. Right from the beginning, Hong Kong was the final destination of the Goldsey. Since the payment started over 2 years ago, not a single penny has been drawn from the account. The balance stands in the order of $500,000 American dollars.
Oh,
it's a lockaway account.
Oh, George, darling, lockaway. Well, that's quite a different kettle of fish. It had to be, didn't it? Lockaway. Now, for whom? Who can be worth so much? Would it be a network? Oh, no, 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 they'd never do it for a network. No precedent. So who can it be? Whatever can he deliver that would be worth so much?
We must try to find out, Connie.
Well, no wonder Carla wanted the bodies buried. Carla's a China hand, too, you know. Isn't he, Connie?
Oh, he is, darling, in his own way.
Chief, this is a trustee account, yes. So, who founded it?
I was coming to that. Co. Forenamed Drake. Born in Shanghai, 1925. Address, 7 Gates, Headland Road, Hong Kong. He's the chairman and managing director of China Air Sea Limited. Hong Kong. Drake Co. Doc.
Co. Co. I must see the character. It depends entirely on the characters. Drake is mission school, of course, Shanghainese mission boy. Well, well, Shanghai was where it all started, you know. The first party cell ever was in Shanghai.
Was there anything else traced on Drake Co., Peter?
He was appointed to the Order of the British Empire under the Hong Kong list in 1966 for social and charitable services to the colony. That's all.
You will remember that China Air Sea was the ultimate owner of Indo-Charter Vientiane, say. So it ties up nicely.
There is a beneficiary to this trustee account, of course.
The beneficiary is unknown. Perhaps we shall see why when we get the film, which should be...
Tomorrow morning, George.
There must be a means of identification, Smiley.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Even a thumbprint. It's not unknown among the Chinese.
Well, as I say, when we get Schoolboy's actual film, we shall be able to really start. For the moment...
Yeah, come along, Doc. Yeah. Well, I'd never have believed Carla would have paid out money like that. I mean, $500,000. For what?
Wasn't there a Swatownese connection? Yes, the intermediate company in Bangkok. Thank you, Smiley. Let us see the film as soon as possible.
Of course. Will you stay a moment, Peter?
Oh, yes, George.
Odd. One has no sense of shock. Why is that, I wonder? A big fish in Carla's pay. Lock away accounts. So why no sense of shock? Send a message to Craw, Peter. Congratulate Schoolboy and tell him to put things in mothballs for the moment.
Yes, George. You'll have to talk to the Intelligence Steering Group before you move, won't you?
Yes, of course. See to it that Schoolboy's kept strictly to his newspaper business.
We're in mothballs. The word is, well done and howl your water. Your job is to put in mileage for the comic. Nothing else. Hear me?
Well, don't you think the paper might like a few words on Mr. D. Co.?
That would be a bad idea, Monsignor. Very bad.
Oh, come on. The bloody man's practically public property.
All the same now. Lay off. I'll ring only when I have to.
Mr. Drake Co., OBE. Steward of the Royal Hong Kong Jockey Club. Millionaire. Citizen above suspicion. And nuts to you, Craw,
And to dear old George, too. What have you found, Jerry Sport? Arrived in Hong Kong 1951, Ko is Hakka, sea people from Chuchao, born on boats. Minor gang leader, original money from Ritz Ballroom, high-class pickup spot, Shanghainese girls. Witness says, Drake Ko was very tough boy, you don't tell no fairy story to Drake Ko. He don't like politician people one piece. Studied law in London, not called to bar. One son died 1968, Nelson Ko. Drake begat Nelson. Picture? Caption? Mr. Drake Ko, OBE, with his horse, Lucky Nelson. Bit macabre, call your horse after your dead son. Ko is wearing a beret, obviously bald. Tall for a Chinese. Looks quite cheerful. God help me, owns ocean-going cruiser called Admiral Nelson. Obsession with Nelson, wonder why. Note, horse Lucky Nelson entered to run at Happy Valley day after tomorrow. So, Jerry, that's where you might get a look at him. Even a word. A day at the races might do you good, old sport.
Come on, open space! Stretch for it, man! Ride! Use your whip, man! Use your whip!
No good, Clive. Lucky Nelson's coming through. Oh, look at that, sport! Oh, super, super!
Oh, objection! That horse is pulled! I never saw a horse so pulled in my life!
Lucky Nelson's there, Clive, by 3 lengths.
You're Gerald Westerby, aren't you?
Yeah, that's me, sport.
Grant. Barton told me you'd like to meet Drake Ko. I'm a course steward. I knew your father.
Gosh, super. Marvellous.
Cole's just been given the cup flushed with victory over there. Perhaps you'll get something out of him for once.
Oh, just a few words, you know. It's jolly nice of you.
Barton told me you did Lucky Nelson.
Afraid so. Bit of a turnout, wasn't it?
Oh, it was Drake's race, all right. Clever of you to spot it. More than we did. The burly chap with him is Drake's right hand, too. I'll have a word with him first. Mr. Two, this is Mr. Westerby, son of the famous one.
Hello, Mr. Two. Super.
Good day, Mr. Westerby.
Mr. Westerby is hoping he can have a word with Mr. Cole for his important newspaper.
You want to talk to Mr. Cole, Mr. Westerby?
If it's convenient.
Sure, it's convenient. Mr. Cole win a horse race. Everything's convenient. I bring him over. Stay here. What's your father's name?
Samuel Westerby.
Lord Westerby.
You were here.
Drake's right hand.
Major Domo. Manager, chief bag carrier, bottle washer, fixer. Been with him since the start. They ran away from the Japanese together in the war.
I'm bringing him over.
This, the man.
Sir, this is Westerby, whose famous father, the Lord, had a lot of slow horses and fast newspapers.
What? Papers?
Well, the best known was the Chronicle.
And that, the paper with the girls. I used to read that paper when I was in London, during my residence there for the purpose of legal study at the famous Gray's Inn of Court.
I backed your horse, Mr. Coe. How does it feel to win?
Better than losing, I think.
What's your formula for winning, Mr. Kerr?
Hard work. No politics. Plenty sweet.
Are you a lot richer than you were 10 minutes ago?
I was pretty rich 10 minutes ago. You may tell your paper also, I am a great admirer of the British way of life.
Even though we don't work hard and make a lot of politics.
Just tell them.
What makes you so lucky, Mr. Kerr? What makes you so lucky, sir?
No comment.
Oh, play fair, Mr. Coe. The world's full of people who dream of being as rich as you are. Give them a clue, won't you? What makes you so lucky?
Mind your own damn business. Mr. Coe, go now, Mr. Westby. You leave him to go, Mr. Westby.
Oh, sure, sport, sure.
Goodbye, Mr. Westby.
Last time Coe won, he didn't even lead the horse into the paddock. He waved it away, didn't want it.
Why the hell not?
Hadn't expected it to win. Hadn't told his Chew Chow friends. Bad face. Maybe he felt the same when you asked him about his luck.
I see. How did he get to be a steward?
Oh, you had to buy the boats for him, no doubt. The usual thing. Well, cheers. Seeing you. Don't forget your winnings.
I've collected already. Thanks, sport. Guess I'll make my way back.
Aren't there any other cars but Rolls Royces and Mercedes on this dirt track? What did they say? Drake Coe was a very tough boy. Well, Tew is hardly fragile either. You don't tell no fairy story to Drake Coe. Speak of the devil, and there he is. Drake Coe walking with the mob. The crowd just ahead. It's him, all right. Left his gang of friends behind. Going into the road. Through the gate. He stopped. Ah, waiting for the Phantom or the Merc or the Chrysler. Hang about, Jerry. Takes his beret off. Holds it out into the road. Car. Red E-type, soft top, open. For Co. HK478S. Driver, blue headscarf, dark glasses, long blonde hair. Bare back. A hell of a lot of lovely woman. Co gets in, kisses her cheek. Once, twice. Yeah, thrice. Fingers on her bare back. And away they go. Get to a phone, Jerry.
He was on view, Craw. He'd had a big win. Then he left, walked away, waited in the road, and got picked up by a very nice blonde party in a sports car.
Sports car?
Jag, E-type, HK478S. I think she was a close friend. Very close.
Round eye?
Of course she was round eye. Long blonde hair.
Well, well, well. You've seen a lot, Monsignor.
George Smiley, in all your feathers. My dear, you've lost simply pounds.
Oh, Lord Roddy Martindale, oh no.
What do you mean, oh Lord, oh no? Didn't you know I'd been translated, allowed to sit on this very high-powered intelligence steering committee?
Who besides you is here today, Roddy?
Oh, as if you didn't know. Sir Saul Enderby will take the chair. Oliver Lacon will sit next to him, of course. The tall, fit-looking person is Wilbraham, Colonial Office. Very interested in Hong Kong.
The lady in the brown outfit?
Home and Colonial too, I believe. Miss Green. I suppose we'd better take our places.
Well, lady and gentlemen, shall we begin? Jolly good beef, George. Can't understand some of it, but... Well, I take it you've all read and... digested George Smiley's work.
Oh, it's very good, George. So clear, dear.
Do shut up, Roddy. Oliver Lacon, you should first.
Well, let me try to summarise the summary in bald terms. A prominent Chinese Hong Kong citizen is under suspicion of being a Russian spy. That's the nub?
He is known to receive very large Russian subventions.
From a secret fund devoted to financing penetration agents?
Yes.
Solely for financing them, or does this fund have other uses, such as propaganda, informal trade kickbacks, that sort of thing?
To the best of our knowledge, no.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Wilbraham, yes?
How good's their knowledge? Hasn't been too good in the past, has it?
We would want far more corroboration, Mr. Chairman.
So would we. It is in order to obtain corroboration that we are asking for rights and permissions.
Is there any suggestion that this well-known citizen subverts the colony?
No, not that we know.
Then what is he doing? Nothing. They've got it all wrong.
Go on, Oliver.
Well, for what it's worth, he probably does as much to enrich the colony as any other wealthy and respected Chinese businessman. Well, he seems something of a Hong Kong prototype. Supports charities. Successful, benevolent, has the wealth of Croesus... and the commercial morality of the whorehouse.
I say that's a bit hard. Steady on, Oliver.
Well, short of the Victoria Cross and a baronetcy, therefore, it's hard to see how he could be less suitable a subject for harassment by a British service or recruitment by a Russian one.
In my world, we call that good cover.
Touché, Oliver.
Ah.
You say here the money first of all came from Paris through Vientium. Then later it was paid through a Hamburg-Vienna-Hong Kong tie-up. Now, why do you think they did that, so to speak?
It is sensible practice to vary the routine from time to time.
Tradecraft, Wilbraham.
Page two, top. Money's all in trust. None of it is being spent, which is in itself jolly odd. It's not Coe's money, but a claimant's, whoever that may be. To them, it's the trust money. So, what's Coe done wrong? What is there against Coe?
Roddy.
There's an awful lot of balls about thumbprints here, George, like something out of Phillips Oppenheim.
Well, the use of thumbprints is old banking practice along the China coast. It dates from the days of widespread illiteracy. The beneficiary, Wilbraham's claimant, is not named, but identifies himself by his left thumbprint, it being less worn than the right.
How quaint.
Thank you, George. It could be Coe's own thumbprint, I suppose. Do you think we should advise the Hong Kong government of the intelligence regarding Coe?
Of course we should advise Hong Kong. They're self-administering. We've no alternative.
What do you say to that, George?
Well, if it were the governor and nobody else, I could hardly object. That is, if you feel it's not too much for him.
Oh, I don't understand. Why the dickens should it be too much for the governor? I mean, he's an experienced administrator.
Well, there's also the problem, I suppose, of the governor being forced into the position of agent provocateur if he continues to receive Coe socially, which he obviously must. We can't frighten the game at this stage.
But good heavens, man, if Coe's a Russian spy, if the governor has him to dinner and perfectly naturally, in confidence, commits some minor indiscretion, well, he could ruin the man's career. He must be told.
Well, of course, if he's given to being indiscreet, I suppose one might argue that he's not a suitable person to be informed anyway.
Oh, I say, George, that is a point.
Bloody odd it would be, wouldn't it, if Peking woke up one morning to the glad news that the governor of Hong Kong made a point of entertaining Moscow's ace spy at his dinner table once a month.
Well, it's 4 o'clock, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, we'd better wind up. Now, if you'll leave us a moment, we'll talk and ring our masters. Be as fast as possible, George, I promise you. There can be no earthly question of reopening the Hong Kong residency, George. Everything else, with certain limiting conditions and safeguards regarding desirability, money, and the duration of the license, is granted. What are you going to call the operation, George? Do you know yet?
Ah, yes. Operation Dolphin.
Well done, George, darling. Dolphin, what a good name for our resurrection. Now, George, this blonde schoolboy saw with Coe, we really must find her. She really is a clue. Do make it an urgent task for Craw.
Do you know, Smiley, when Coe was in London as a law student, he gave the name of a Chinese Baptist missionary as a referee, a Mr. Hibbert. This man must have known Coe at the beginning. He must be a very old man now, but I have reason to believe he is still alive and living in England.
Word from my whisperer in Hong Kong, Monsignor. Coe's round-eyed girlfriend is one Lisa Worth. Whisperer claims she is an aristocratic English lady and with a Kraut forename. More likely to be an airline hostess called Lizzie. File on her is missing from police records. Schoolboy getting bored with long haul.
It has occurred to me that schoolboy has had to kick his heels for a month. We're doing our best here, but Coe and his Russian money stands like a mountain before us, which we can visit whenever we wish, but can't move. Information on Miss Worth was quite invaluable.
I think I found the girl, George. married once to a schoolmaster called Worthington. I'm sure she's the girl Sam Collins, work name Mellon with two L's, was working in Vientiane. She could be a lever, George. And old Connie wonders what exactly the link between Sam and this girl was. That is, if Connie has found the right one.
What are her parents called, Peter?
Pelling, George. He's a retired post office official.
Yes, of course, it's all here. Cockfosters, Arcady Mansions. Arcady, good Lord.
Shall I have someone visit them?
No, I think I shall go myself.
Huh?
I shouldn't really, but I need to be sure, and I need to get near the girl. As Connie says, she is a potential lever.
All right, George. What would you like for cover?
Bullion Universal Security Advisors, I think.
I'll give you a nice green official card as Mr. G. Oates.
Fine. I'll ring them and fix an appointment, and, Peter.
Yes, George?
Pelling is likely to phone and confirm, so make quite sure the switchboard are clear and take it yourself.
Right.
I'll let you know when I'm off. How could he mention? Will it live up to its name, I wonder?
Mr. Oates? Meet Nunk.
Good afternoon, Mr. Pelling.
Yes. Well, just who are you, precisely? Are you Secret Service, or aren't you?
His card, Your Worship. Green in hue.
Oh? We're exchanging cards, are we? I'll need one, too. Slip down to Smith's desk and have some printed.
Do sit down, Mr. Oates. Do you like tea?
He doesn't need tea. He's not a guest. I didn't ask him. Bullion Universal Security Advisors. My Aunt Fanny. I'll stay the week. Move in, if you like. Have her bed.
He wants to talk about Lizzie, darling. Now be a father for a change.
Fat lot of good her better do, you mind?
Oh, for those kind words. Of course you will have some tea.
Thank you.
That's Lizzie's photograph.
Ah.
She's very beautiful, you see.
Look as long as you like, Oates.
Mr. Pelling, sir, your daughter is being considered for an important appointment with a major overseas corporation. She'll be specialising in air transport, and her work will give her advanced knowledge of large gold shipments. It carries an extremely high remuneration. My organisation's been asked to approach you in confidence about your daughter's background.
Set. Where's that tea? It's high time Lizzie was rewarded, and I'm frankly displeased that it hasn't occurred before now, seeing what they owe her. Set, where's that card?
It's on the table. They have a head office in South Moulton Street.
Any inquiries, telephone, blah, blah, blah. It's ringing.
There. The tea.
Bullion Universal.
Oh, give me the managing director. Has he got a name?
Mr. Forbes Lyle.
Yeah, well, you tell Mr. Forbes Lyle that Mr. Humphrey Pelling desires a personal word with him now.
We haven't heard of her for a year.
Your daughter?
Tea for two, and tea for three, and me for you, and you from her.
She's mad, you know.
You don't write to her at all.
She doesn't want it.
Forbes Lyle here. What's your problem, Mr. Pelling?
It's this. Of a man calling himself Oates sitting in front of me. Short, fat, and worried. What do you want me to do with him?
Tell him what he wants to know. He's not snooping around for nothing, you know. Stuff on your daughter is most important. Your cooperation will be a great help.
I see. Oh, thanks. I'll do my best.
Good man. Cheerio.
Good chap, my managing director, you know. On the ball.
I'm still not sure he's not Secret Service, Sis. He may not be glamour, but that could be deliberate.
I have some forms. Perhaps we could...
Let's have a look. Give him some more tea. He's wolfed that lot already.
Yes, sir. Tea for the wolf.
Now that That's excellent, Mr. Pellingson. Now, could you tell me of any experience she's had in the transportation industry?
Right. Put down, working for the British Secret Service in a high capacity. Undercover. There. It's out now. No daughter of mine's going to be an unsung heroine. She'll get the George Medal before she's done, you mark my words.
Balls! That was just one of her stories, you know that.
We were talking of experience in the transportation industry.
Her first commercial experience came in... How do you pronounce it?
Vientiane, capital of Laos.
A distilling company.
She was selling kegs of unbranded whiskey to American layabouts. Then her lover went and filched the money.
Balderdash! The woman's insane. Disregard her.
She was living with a pilot. Tiny, she called him. Tiny Ricardo. He was gorgeous. But the war had turned him inside out. Well, of course it would, wouldn't it? Same with our boys, wasn't it? Missions, day after day. Ah! Scramble!
She's blind mad. Barking. Mad as a newt.
Tiny Ricardo. A lamb. He died, you know. Lizzie was heartbroken.
She wasn't living with anyone, you anthropoid ape. It was a put-up, the whole thing. She was working for the British Secret Service. The name of a commanding officer in the British Secret Service was Melon. Like the fruit, but twice as many L's. Take that down, Oates. Melon.
He's bananas.
With Melon, she fought against drug dealers, Chinese, homosexuals, every single element sworn to the subversion of our island nation.
Now, ask me where Lizzie gets it from.
It is true. She went to Hong Kong for Melon, to investigate drugs and bullion. She could have gone to prison.
Well, thank you, Mr. Pelling.
She works for Melon, and she loves her father. Finish.
You've been very kind. All of this I'll treat in absolute confidence. Please don't worry. I'll see myself out.
See yourself how you like.
I'll see you off the premises. This way, Mr. Oates. He won't leave her alone. Never could. He tried, but he never could. She's beautiful, you see.
Yes, of course.
Probably you understand. She's got a dear sweet Chinaman. She went to him to save Ricardo, and then she fell in love with him. He calls her Lisa. Funny, really, we don't like Germans.
I understand she prefers the name Worth rather than Worthington.
Cutting that boring schoolmaster husband down to size, I should think.
When you say she did it to save Ricardo, you mean, of course, that,
She bought Ricardo his life, darling, with the only currency she has. She did him proud, then left him. What the hell, he was a slug. My little Lizzie went behind the hedge with half of Asia before she found her Drake. But she found him.
Drake is the,
Chinaman, dear. Co, or Woe, or Dr. No, for all I know. Now, I think you'd better go, dear. You give me the galloping creeps, to be honest. I can't do with trustworthy faces round me.
Good day to you there, Mrs. Pelling.
And come not again to Arcady, Mr. Oates.
So, the girl's for real, George.
Oh, yes, I'm sure she is.
Whom does she take after?
My dear Peter, you can't imagine. She is rather like a dame in pantomime. Mr. Pelling, late of the Royal Mail, is small and fierce. Ugly, I'd say. Still, does happen.
Melon in Vientiane, was that?
Oh, yes, Sam Collins. She seems to have thought a lot of him. Sam found her a total disaster, he tells me. And by the way, Peter, Sam will be joining us next week.
Here at the circus?
For the present, yes. See that he gets a nice office. He'll be very self-sufficient.
I have noticed, George.
Your barking on the phone to Pelling was most impressive. It smoothed things a lot, thank you. Is Connie about?
No, George. She's gone with Dr. Salis to the seaside. Worthing, where the missionary Hibbert and his daughter live.
What's their cover, Peter?
They're vetting Drake Coe before he gets put up for a knighthood. That Cabinet Honours Committee thing.
Sir Drake Coe. That's one thing I'd not thought of, I will say. Sir Drake. Well, I'll be blowed. Hey, Doris?
Are you? Drake was ambitious, Dad.
Tell me again about the early Shanghai days, Mr. Hibbert.
There was Daisy Fong, Daisy and her bell. doing God's work. Even if she did fall later, she'd go down the streets ringing the daylights out of that bell, down the docks or the nightclub areas, the Rue de Jaff. That was the worst spot, where the houses of sin were. But it was down on the docks that Daisy and her bell found the coves. They'd come up from Swatow, the two of them. When was that? 1936, I suppose. Young Drake was 10 or 11, and his brother Nelson was 8. Mind you, they hadn't names then. They were Chiu Chow, boat people. Mother dead. Killed by guns, they said. It was your mother's idea, you know, Doris. Their names. She always wanted boys.
So she used to tell me.
I told them. You'll be Drake, I said. And you'll be Nelson, because you're both brave sailors. How's that? Oh, they loved my wife, you know. They used to stroke her hair. They'd never seen blonde hair before.
Mr. Hibbert, we have no note of a brother till now. He was younger, you say?
No note of Nelson. Why, Drake loved him. Nelson was his whole life. Drake would do anything for him.
I'm afraid we are to blame, Mr. Hibbert. There's a blank on the form against brothers and sisters.
They were chalk and cheese. I never saw two brothers so different, nor so faithful, and that's a fact. Nelson was a rebel from the day he was born. Drake, though, was a persuader. A persuader.
He was sly, was Drake.
Nelson, he'd a real quarrel with God from the start. Then the Japs came and they shut us up. Killed your mother. We got away, you know, and the mission closed. And Daisy Fong, with her handbell, led the children to Chungking.
He can't go on too long. He gets gaga.
Oh, yes, I can, Doris. I've had my share of life. Now I can do what I like.
But you went back to Shanghai, eh? After the Japanese were defeated. And you found the coves again, eh?
They'd forgotten their English, so I had to give them lessons again. Drake wept when he heard my wife was dead. But Nelson, now, he didn't cry or pray. She was now the enemy. We all were.
We being precisely, Mr. Hibbert?
Capitalists, missionaries, all of us carpetbaggers who were there for Nelson's soul or his labor or his silver and those like him. Exploiters. That's how he saw us. Right, too, in a way. You see, Nelson learned about communism in Chungking, while Drake, being older, was drafted into Chiang's army.
So you stayed in Shanghai until the communist takeover in 49. You kept an eye on the coves, did you?
Drake was adamant that Nelson went to school, and he did it. Drake was 19 by then, and a real fixer.
He was a crook. He joined a gang and stole when he wasn't pulling me.
Nelson would have a go at me on politics. My, he'd some ideas. Nothing we could have taught him.
What was his discipline at this time?
Why, the Communist Party, naturally.
What was he studying, Mr. Hibbert, and where?
Shipbuilding, roads, railways, factories. His passion was engineering. He graduated from Shanghai in 1951, and that meant that Drake could come out, as he'd always planned.
And after Nelson graduated, what became of him, do you know?
He went to Russia in 1953, I think it was, to Leningrad University, And he stayed there until the late 50s.
And after Leningrad, what did they do to him then?
He came back to Shanghai. A shipbuilder. Russian taught. Oh, how he loved those Russians. Promoted. An important man. But admiring Russia. How long was that fashionable in Mao's new wonderland? Doris, did you get me a shawl?
You're wearing it.
So he rose in the hierarchy. What comes next, Mr. Hibbert?
He's dead, young man. He's dead.
Dead? I think
we have taxed Mr. Hibbert quite enough.
How did Nelson die, Mr. Hibbert? When did he die?
He's very tired, you know, very old. I can tell you how we heard. Drake was in England with his henchman, too. It was April of 1967. He drove down to see us with Chew. He brought me a platinum cigarette lighter and £1,000 in cash for Dad's church. Then he took me in a corner and asked me to come to Hong Kong and be his mistress. Bloody sauce. Dad asked him, of course, how's Nelson? He just said, dead. As if Nelson was a dog. Then he said, I have no brother. Nelson is dead.
I prayed for Nelson, and I pray for him still. I do not believe the light of God's love can be put out forever. Not by politics, nor by the sword. And now he's dead. I pray for his soul.
Politics and the sword, you say. So it was a violent death, was it, Mr. Hibbert? Did Drake tell you that?
You've been very kind, Miss Hibbert. Really, we've all we could possibly need and more. And now, away...
And the year after, he lost his son, Nelson, too. He'll be a lonely man, will Drake. Pray for my little son, Nelson, he wrote me.
Yes, but did he ever ask you to pray for his brother, Nelson?
No. No, he didn't.
I wonder why not. Perhaps he wasn't really dead. There are more ways than one of dying in China, aren't there? And not all of them are fatal. Disgraced, is that a better expression?
I don't know, Mr. Whatever your name was. Doris, let her go.
Yes, of course, and thank you so much, Miss David, but...
I hope your driver hasn't got too cold out there.
The brother story is most interesting, Mr. Hibbert.
No, I need some peace. They're to go, Doris.
They're on their way, Dad.
Just before we go, Miss Hibbert, we have a reference to a Lisa in Mr. Coe's life. Does the name mean anything to you?
Lisa was my mum's name. She was German Lutheran. The swine stole that too, did he?
I think Dr. Salis is upturning, if that's the right expression, every corner of the Oriental world's records from Cambridge to Tokyo.
And there's Rome and Munich, Peter. Don't forget them.
The tracking down of Nelson Kerr will be written on the doc's heart. He's convinced he's alive, you know, George.
Yes, well, there's good reason. Connors are the same opinion.
Find Nelson alive, George, and where does it get us?
Only that there will still be a link, in all probability.
A link? Come in. Oh, it's you, Molly. Come and sit down and brighten our lives.
Thank you, Peter. Good afternoon, Mr. Smiley.
Good afternoon, Miss Meegan. Well, I'll leave you to Peter.
Oh, actually, sir, I have a message for you.
From the cousins, I take it?
Yes, I've just come from the Annex. They want to meet with you at the Annex as soon as possible.
They want what?
Well, they mean they want to meet you, but they use the preposition.
Do you know what about?
Someone called Tiny Ricardo, they told me to say.
Did he? Good God. Is this Martello's invitation?
Oh, yes. Will you please ring him, as of yesterday, really?
Well, Peter, are we being trusted again?
Either that or they want something pretty badly.
Do you appreciate, Molly, that this is the first time the hand of friendship has been extended from Grosvenor Square since Bill Hayden was found out?
I had thought so, sir. Will you phone Marty?
Yes, of course. So we're no longer on the arms-length list.
If Tiny Ricardo is deceased, what could he have done to be of interest?
Well, let's hope Martello and his company employees will tell me.
George, real good of you to come. I know how busy you are, I know.
Not at all, Mart here. Pleased to be here.
Saul, I want you to meet one of the true legends of our profession. Saul, George Smiley. George, this is Saul Eklund.
Nice to know you. And meet my assistant, Cy Johansson. Cy, George Smiley.
Heard a lot about you, sir.
And you know Murphy here, I think, George.
Sure, we met on numerous occasions.
Yes, indeed. Numerous.
George, Saul Eklund is high in our Drug Enforcement Administration, formerly the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs. George, our people in the company like to work very closely indeed with their good friends in narcotics.
Cuts both ways.
It's parameters, Mr. Smiley, sir. On a deal like this, you get some areas, they overlap entirely.
Maybe we should get ourselves up to date on the latest details first. Murphy, go ahead.
Subject flew to Bangkok and was picked up at the airport by Tan Lee in his personal limousine. They proceeded directly to the Air Sea Permanent Suite of the Hotel Erawan. Tan is managing director of Asian Rice and General, Air Sea's Bangkok subsidiary.
Was Ko along?
No, sir. Ko took his manager, Chu, along with him.
Why the hell doesn't somebody bug that damn hotel suite, Sai?
Bangkok says the walls. They got no proper cavities or something.
Cavities, my ass.
Go on, Murphy.
Sir, the three men, that's Ko and Chu and Tan Lee, drove down to Bangkok port. And they looked at 20 or 30 small cement carriers tied up along the bank. Then they drove back to Bangkok airport, and Ko alone flew to Manila, Philippines.
Cement carriers, my ass. Those are boats that do the run up to Hong Kong, Murphy?
Yes, sir.
We know those boats. They carry the dope. We've been going for those boats for years.
Mr. Eklund, I take it you're particularly interested in Ko.
That's it, Mr. Smiley.
Yes, sir, that's it.
And what about Ricardo, deceased, Marty?
George, at our request, enforcement here took a second look at the background and record of Ricardo.
Seems Ricardo's alive after all. Seems like it was a prime error.
Happens to all of us, George. Even you, okay?
Yes, indeed.
Ricardo's death is in our files, is on and around August 21.
Correct.
However, on September 2nd, a couple of weeks after his death, right? It seems Ricardo made personal contact with one of the narcotics bureaus in the Asian Theater. Ricardo offered his services on a sell-and-tell basis regarding an opium mission he claimed to have received to fly right over the border into Red China.
Ricardo had made a good living when the war was on flying dope.
Now, he flew a lot of missions for the company in Laos, and when the war ended, the company resettled him and pulled up the ladder. So maybe at that, the gamekeeper Ricardo turned into the poacher Ricardo, if you follow me.
Well, not absolutely.
Long as the war was on, Ricardo carried dope for the company to keep the home fires burning up in the hill villages. War ended, he carried it for himself.
Thank you, Mr. Eklund. So, Ricardo offered an unnamed narcotics bureau opium on the one hand, information on the other, right?
Right, George. For payment, he wanted $50,000 in small notes and a West German passport for a one-time journey out. The Bureau agreed on the sale of the opium.
You mean they bought it?
Sure. There's a fixed tariff for such deals.
And the West German passport out?
Well, that wasn't so straightforward. Saul, maybe you should handle this part.
The Bureau asked Ricardo for some of his information, what we call taking it to first base. Ricardo comes up with the story he's been ordered to fly the dope over the border into Red China and bring back an unspecified load in payment. He said he embarked on his journey for Red China, chicken out, and hedge-hopped home over Laos. He said he knew who was behind the deal, the Mr. Big, and that if Mr. Big's people found him out, they'd kick his teeth right up his throat. He said he had the plane still, hidden, a beechcraft, and he offered to show this plane. That's all we have.
They bought the opium, George, but the information went nowhere. That was the human error, George. No further action was put on the case.
Where is Ricardo now, Marty? Do you know?
Not known, George.
Beechcraft. Is that a single-engine plane?
Twin engines, George. Kind of executive runabout kind of thing.
And where would the opium be carried? How much was it?
400 kilos in weight. In the cabin. Most likely unscrewed the spare seats.
Yes, I suppose they would have done. Thank you.
Well, what else is there, Saul?
What else is there? I'll tell you, Martello. We got a whole apparatus standing by, ready to shake out Coe's connection across the hemisphere. I know,
We've got a hands-off deal with the Brits on Hong Kong, but Ko is more than just Hong Kong. We got drugs on Ko, we got arms, we got the biggest damn load of red gold we ever saw Moscow hand to one man in our lives, and we've got the first proof ever, if this guy Ricardo's telling a correct story, of a Moscow-subsidized drug subversion program which is ready and willing to carry the battle into Red China in the hopes of doing the same for them as they're already doing for us.
Marty, oh my lord, you told them of the gold scene.
Sure he told us. That's liaison, Mr. Smiley. Martello told us, though, to play it delicate. It's a British ball game. Their territory, their Joe, their party. Moses, for the first time ever, we have gotten ourselves a saber-toothed Soviet communist corrupter in our sights, pushing dope and screwing up the area and taking Russian money, and we can prove it.
I doubt if you can, unless you can prove what the gold scheme is for. And, Marty, I'd like to remind you that we have your general declaration that you will abstain from operations in British areas unless we say you can. And we have a contract with you on this particular case. You will leave Ko to us. That is the contract.
I've said it. We're going. Come on, Sol.
Sure, Sol. And sure, you said it.
Okay, Sol, we heard you. Murphy, you go too.
Yes, sir.
Who else have your headquarters told, Marty? The Revenue Service, the Customs, the Mayor of Chicago, their 12 best friends?
We have politics same as you, George. And, George, suppose they nail Ko. Suppose they get him out of the colony into Sing Sing on a 10 to 30 rap. Well, we can pick him clean at will.
I don't know if Drake Ko is all that important, Marty.
What the hell's that meant to mean? Okay, Saul knows Ko's funds are from Moscow and knows he pushes opium, but that's all.
Does he know of the girl?
No, George, he doesn't know about Mrs. Worthington. She went with Ko to Bangkok and she flew on with him to Manila.
I thought you may have. So, how long have we got out on our own? What's our head start before Saul and his narcotic squad come barging in?
3 months, George. 10 to 12 weeks. It's fluid. 3 months outside, I would say.
Yesterday, we had all the time in the world.
In part one of The Honorable Schoolboy, dramatized by Frederick Bradnam from the novel by John le Carré, George Smiley was played by Peter Vaughan and Jerry Westerby by Martin Jarvis. Peter Gwillem, John Rowe, Connie Sachs, Mary Wimbush, Doc DeSalis, Cyril Shapps, Craw and Drake Ko, Henry Stamper, Molly Meakin, Heather Barrett, Mr. Pelling and Mr. Tew, Roger Hume, Mrs. Pelling, Frieda Dowie, Sam Collins, Alexander John, Reverend Hibbert, Colin Douglas, Doris Hibbert, Shirley Stelfox, Roddy Martindale, Stephen Hancock, Saul Enderby, Ronald Baddeley, Oliver Lakin, Edward Cast, Martello, Paul Maxwell, Frost, Terry Malloy, Mr. Wilbraham, Christopher Banks, and Miss Green, Patricia Gibson. The theme was composed by Stephen Hancock. The play was directed in our Birmingham studios by Roger Pine. Martin Jarvis is a National Theatre player.